name is Tanzania Fair. I'm the founder of Unlocking Your Freedom. Definitely tune in Chatters That Matter. Let's talk about it to hear inspirational stories and life-changing conversations.
Hey, 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 you know me. It's Dr. Cheryl Bryant-Bruce, MD, the celebrity doc, and we are here with another episode of Chatters That Matter. Let's talk about it. I am your show host here to educate, inform, and entertain you. I'm going to go ahead and give our disclaimer right up front. I am a bona fide and true medical doctor, but I am not your medical doctor. So any information that you hear on this show is for your information and entertainment only. It does not constitute a doctor-patient relationship between the two of us. If you hear anything that you think applies to you, take that information back to your own personal physician and discuss it with them. With that being said, without further ado, I want to bring to our stage an amazing woman who her husband was recently on our show, and he was telling us what a powerhouse she was and what a tremendous impact she made on his life and the tremendous impact that she's making on the lives of many others. I welcome to our platform, Tanzania Fair. Welcome, Tanzania.
Thank you. I'm super, super excited to be here for sure.
We're super excited to have you. And I'll let you all know again, you know, we don't mind giving shameless plugs. So I'm going to give a shameless plug for Tanzania and myself as well. We will both be sharing a stage at the Leadership Experience Tour in Troy, Michigan, this upcoming Saturday, March 23rd. If you haven't gotten a ticket, Tanzania is going to let you know how to contact her, and you know how to contact me. Slip into my DM and send a message, and we will make sure that you get the information on how to get a ticket for what's going to be a spectacular event with 45 world-class speakers on the stage. So you won't want to miss this. Tanzania, I'm so looking forward to hearing you speak. So why don't you start out by telling us, you know, not just your name, but who you are and what you're doing.
For sure. My name is Tanzania Fair. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I have an organization called Unlocking Your Freedom. It is a platform for just individuals who need a safe space. But we focus on business and mental health. You know, I don't see too many platforms where, you know, we can focus on both. You have to choose either or. And we know that, like, your mental health is everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And people try to run a business, but it's like, you got to make sure your mental health is good, you know. And so I host events. I do retreats every year. So this year will be my fifth retreat, which will be happening in Maryland this fall, which I'm super, super excited about. I've also founded a nonprofit organization years ago called Hype Help Young People Evolve, working with young people on social and emotional development through the art of mime. So I am a professional pantomime.
Oh, wow. How interesting.
Yep. Yep.
I have a real affinity for mimes because in my earlier days, I was in New York City, and we would go to Central Park. And they always had the mimes, because back then, before Giuliani cleaned everything up, the street performers were a huge thing. And we belonged to the New York Street Performers Association. And they actually had a section that was specifically for mimes. And there were tons of mimes in the city. So it didn't matter which corner you showed up on, and particularly when you got around Central Park, you would find just fabulous mimes out there, and it was always so entertaining. So I have a special point Aww. In my heart for mimes.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. I have to look that up. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So tell me how you got into what you're doing now. What was your journey? What was that starting point, that one thing that put you on this path?
That is a great question. I believe it was two particular things. One was when I was in middle school, I went to a performing arts school. I'm a dancer. Then I switched to a private school, and so that was really tough for me. And I really struggled in private school because I didn't know anything about that world. And I only had
What
one.
was different about that world?
That's a great question. The curriculum was definitely different. Performing arts is more, you take art classes, you take, dance, and you have all these different pieces. The private school, the work was way more difficult in a good way, right? But it was nothing, I wasn't used to it. And so when I got switched, I was in eighth grade. Like, you just switched me into eighth grade and I'm in private school, and now I have to figure out this whole new way of thinking and working and doing. Which I almost did not even pass eighth grade. That's how hard it was for me. And so, I in that moment, I had to become self-motivated to pass eighth grade. I was like, you know what? I'm about to work with my teachers. I started asking them for stuff, checking in with them to make sure that I passed eighth grade, because that was so important to me. And so I did all the things of being self-motivated. And I end up passing eighth grade on my own, being self-determined. But I realized that everybody is not self-determined when it comes to younger people, younger youth, middle schoolers, high schoolers, elementary kids. They may need somebody to motivate them, right? So it showed me in that moment that everybody is not self-motivated. They need somebody to motivate them. And that's where the nonprofit Hype came about, helping young people evolve from out of that experience.
All right. How much support did you have from your own family situation and from the support system that you had around you outside of school, or did you have a support system?
No, I didn't. I would say my mom, but I didn't really have, she was a single mom, and my dad, he got killed to the streets at a young age. He was like 22, 23 years old, young. You know what I mean? So I never even got a chance to experience that. And she was young too, which forced her to be a single mom, So yeah, no, I don't feel like I had people that I knew of, but I don't feel like I had like a support system. I never felt like I had a safe space in my family or, in anything. I didn't even know that even existed. Right. And so all you know in families is to, all you know is to just isolate, deal, and figure it out on your own, because you don't have nobody to really go to and kind of share something without somebody, making it a mockery or you being the T of the family or something like that, if you will. Yeah.
Now you shifted from the public school system in
Yeah.
Detroit to this private school system.
Yeah.
At the time that you made the shift, was there a sense that in the public school system there were more people who were experiencing your same struggles, and then now you're in this private school system? Did it feel like they were supported and embraced, and now you're in a sense competing against people that have these resources that you don't have?
That's a great question. So the performing arts I went to was like in like a suburb. It was a performing arts school, so I was in a suburb of a performing arts school, and then I got transitioned to a private school in Detroit. I think even at that age, I feel like I was just going through a lot internally with myself, with my own like identity and stuff like that as well, because of some stuff in my past and what I had been through. And my confidence wasn't there for sure, I would say, compared to like other kids and like, and stuff like that.
So what was it that was making you unconfident?
That's a great question. I would say, so that was the second thing. My voice became silent at a very young age. And in my own family, I experienced being treated differently because of my skin tone. And I don't think families understand how you can, like, you are the problem of this happening in this cycle, but you don't see nothing wrong with it, or you don't believe that you're actually a part of the problem. And I felt that at a very young age. It was like, oh, if you were a lighter skin kid, You get, oh, you're so cute, you're so beautiful. Oh, you get, But when you're darker, they just look over you like you don't even exist.
Right.
You don't get embraced. You don't get the love. And people don't understand that. Like, kids can feel that. I was very young and I felt that at 4 and 5. Like, I felt being treated differently, you know? But, you know, it's not something that I can go and have a conversation with somebody about without somebody getting offended, right? And
Right,
not wanting to
absolutely.
understand that, hey, you this is you are a part of the problem, right? But I felt that so toughly, you know, in my family. And then also I wanted to be a dancer. So I'm all I watched 106 in Park all the time growing up. Okay. Like that was my jam, you know. So I'm like, yep, like Chris Brown, like, you know, I'm gonna be dancing for, you know, okay, I'm about to be, you know what I'm saying? I'm all excited, but then I'm looking at the videos, I'm like, they all light skinned.
Right.
I don't see no dark skinned girl in the background video.
Right.
Can I really do this? I don't even see myself. Can I, or do I have to change myself to be accepted and
Exactly.
do the thing that I really want to do? I was
Exactly. And I
struggling.
mean, even today you see those images. You know, my girl Kelly Rowland just came out with her new movie
Yes.
and she knocked it out of
Yes,
the
she did.
park. But you don't see as many of the Kelly Rowlands as you see of the Beyoncés and the Rihannas,
Yep.
and the difference is clear.
Yep. For sure. Yep. Definitely agree. And I was like, okay, that kind of that thought came in mind, like, you know what, maybe I need to change myself. Okay, you know. But then something happened in high school. I was in 10th grade. I had to be about 14 years old. We in the classroom, right? The guys, they write down a piece of paper. I don't know if you know back in the day how the kids used to grade people in the classroom based on how they look.
Right.
That was a thing. So they grade, and then the paper get around to me, and by my name, I see C's, D's, and F's. But then I noticed that around the darker skinned girls, we all had similar grades. But by the light skinned girls, they had A pluses and A's and B's. And in that moment, I let that piece of paper destroy my self-esteem.
Right.
I was like, dang, maybe it is true. Maybe I need to go and change and do something and to fit in to be accepted. That's what that came about, that experience. Yep.
And I mean, it's a heavy thing. It's really a heavy thing, because I had the unfortunate experience of becoming ill, and part of my treatment was that I was on very extremely high dose steroids. And one of the things that happens when you're on the high dose steroids is it knocks out your melanin and you lighten up. And it was a very interesting experience, because I was able to see the difference between how people interacted with me as a darker skinned woman versus a lighter skinned woman. And the difference was obvious and evident. And I thought, this is the prime example, because I am exactly the same woman. The only thing that changed was the skin tone. And the number of people that told me how beautiful I was or how attractive I was, just like, boom, all of a sudden it went up. And I thought, interesting, because the only thing that changed was my skin tone.
It's real.
It's real. It's real. It's out there and it's real. And we talk about racism and racial stereotypes, but unfortunately, that goes across the board throughout cultures, and even is very prevalent within our own culture and within our own homes, as you expressed.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So when that happened, I convinced my mom to help me tell us that I need to even out my skin tone. I just kind of, I made it up. So I don't even know how, like, I was 14. Like, how did I even know what it was? Like, I was so intelligent. Okay, I don't know. And so I'm like, I gotta even out my skin tone, Then I got an older brother. He's like, yeah, I need something with my even out my skin tone. So that kind of gave me the green light to be like, to kind of get what I need. So I bought it. I don't know. I was looking at cases at Macy's and I found one and I bought it. Well, my hair, I was like washing hair. Mom, she's a hairstylist, so I was washing hair and I got my $25. I bought it. Took it home. Okay, we about to do this. Okay, cool. So, I was like, all right, I'm gonna test it on my hand first. You gonna test it? Okay, you ain't do nothing. Okay, all right. And so then maybe like a day later or so, whatever, I see my skin actually changed to a different color. And then I started noticing like light spots, literally like I'm getting light spots, like literally on my arms, then it's on my legs, on my feet, it's on my chest, on my I kid you not, I had a whole breakdown. I In that moment, I started to so hate myself because of what I did to myself.
So
That,
you triggered a little vitiligo.
yeah, yep. And I and in that moment, it crippled me in that moment. And I mind you, I'm 14 years old. I'm 14. I'm young. I'm 14 years old. And from that day forward, I covered my body up from head to toe for 15 years straight. You couldn't see none of my skin. I covered myself up from head to toe.
Now, let me ask you, it was the vitiligo. And for those of you who don't know what vitiligo is, she basically described it. It's patches and spots of lightening of the skin so that the skin depigments in those spots. But it isn't a uniform, even depigmentation. It does it in patches and spots. So you get that kind of leopard print sort of thing going on. Now, you covered yourself up for 15 years. Did the vitiligo last for 15 years, or was that at that point in your head that you developed this issue about your color and your skin that kept you covered in spite of?
That's a great question. Once that happened, my brother would tease and say, oh, you got the Michael Jackson disease. You know what I'm saying? So I'm in my head, it's terrible. Like I'm just like in my head, I'm thinking it's all these things. But in 2017, I went to a dermatologist, and it's actually called tinea versicolor. It's like an overgrowth of yeast on the skin. It can't do nothing, but it can go back. You take some cream, so it's actually tinea versicolor.
And
And
what that is, which is a difference between just straight up vitiligo, there are different types of vitiligo, but the vitiligo actually depigments the skin. And it's basically more permanent. There are some treatments for it. You can use UV light and such, lasers to try and bring the color back into the skin. The tinea versicolor is actually a fungus, and it can be treated with antifungals. It does depigment the skin, but as soon as the fungus is treated, then the color comes back in.
yep. So I feel like that the chemicals in what I use triggered something for that to actually
Yes,
happen because I had never had that. Yep.
exactly.
I'm trying to make sure I answer your question. So you asked me about.
I asked you about you were covered for 15 years. Did you have the patches of discoloration the entire 15 years, or did you just get stuck there and continued to stay covered up?
No, I had the patches because I didn't see a dermatologist until 2017, right? Which is not too long ago. I mean, it is, but not too long ago. But mind you, I had started getting these patches at 14. That was in 2004. That was in 04. I didn't see a dermatologist until 2017. So I definitely still had all those patches and stuff like that, like on my
Yes.
body. But but even like chemicals in certain products could also trigger it and stuff like that,
Right.
you know. And no, I definitely had the patches. I definitely seen patches and everything through that whole entire time.
Now, was there a reason that you didn't go to the doctor sooner to address it?
That's a great question. So I had begged my mama to go to a dermatologist to do a biopsy on my skin, and I went with my auntie. I remember it's like it was yesterday. And they took a patch and stuff like that, and they tested it, and they came back, and it was like, what did they tell me? They said they couldn't find nothing or something like that. They said it wasn't nothing, and I literally cried like I was about to die in that room. I
Poor
was
baby.
crying so hard, like, girl, you would have thought, girl, I was in there. I was going, because I'm in my head, I'm like, oh, this is the solution. I'm about to figure out what's going on. I'm about to know who not gonna move forward with my life. No,
So
they
now
couldn't.
you're completely covered up.
Yes.
Did you experience depression? Where were you emotionally at that time?
That's a great question. Emotionally, I definitely wasn't good. But one thing that I know in that when I was going through that whole thing, I was grinding and depressed at the same time. I'm out here doing great stuff. I'm out here. I mean, once I got to high school, I had all 4.0s, valedictorian in the 10th grade. They told me National Honor Society, class president, got into six or seven colleges, went to Michigan. I mean, I was grinding and depressed at the same time. Because I knew that I couldn't. I had to come up. I had to do something differently from my family. I'm trying to build a life. I can't go back to the hood. I can't stop grinding.
Right.
But
So
emotionally, I was
you're
done.
working and you're grinding and you're building something successful, but you're building it for somebody else, not yourself. What was happening to you emotionally? Because you said you were not good.
Back to those subconscious thoughts. My thoughts, they were crippling me. Because in my head, I'm like, oh, my skin like this. Nobody don't want to be around me. Ain't no guy gonna want to be with me. Ah, I can't be around. If I was around somebody and I felt like they tried to like laugh or try to like joke about my skin, I would have been in jail. So the best way for me was to keep myself covered up and be isolated. Right. And so I isolated myself, when I was in college, because I
So
felt
did
like
you date at
nobody
all
understood.
during that period?
I did. You know what I'm saying? Like I definitely did, for sure. But actually like being out in the world and like, moving around, I covered myself because I didn't want nobody staring at me. I got that before, people staring at you, like, what you looking at? You know what I'm saying? They're staring at you, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, I ain't even because I somebody say something. I'm gonna be in jail. So I knew that about myself. So that's why I isolated, but also I feel like nobody understood because I knew that my skin wasn't like that. I knew that it was all one color. I knew it wasn't like that, but nobody could understand what I was going through. Nobody, you know what I'm saying? And even your family, again, you become the topic of conversation and the buster of jokes and the tea. But ain't nobody trying to you. Y'all not about to make this out of teeth on my situation. Y'all ain't gonna know nothing. And they didn't, because you're not trying to help me. And in that moment, I realized about safe spaces, and I ended up starting a women's group with the retreats for safe spaces because out of that situation. Because I didn't have a safe space. I didn't know what a safe space, I didn't even know that it even exists. Right? And then you realize, like, wow, like. There's really dysfunction happening within the family that people don't talk about. Like, that's dysfunctional. It's dysfunction. And we cannot, people normalize dysfunction. Like, no, we're not doing that. So even after college, I ended up graduating or whatever. I got accepted into an internship down to Washington, D.C., my senior year in college. I knew I was, once I got down here, I wasn't going back home. Came down here through my internship. I was still covering myself up. I got my first job. I started my nonprofit out here. I got double promoted at my job. I mean, like I was doing all the, I got awards, got, honored. I was 23, 24. I was young, but I was still covering myself. I would go to work and go in the bathroom and cry and cry. I would have moments at work. Like, I gotta go get my, let me go. Want to get out the house. I can't, want to put this on. No, I can't wear it. Oh, let me switch this up. Wait. Oh, no, wait. No, wait. My feet should, wait, hold on. My arm should, wait. I mean, all in my head the entire time. And my breakthrough moment happened in 2015. 2015, because when you are, when your self-esteem is low and you're going through those different things, it allows other people to mistreat you. So I was in a relationship being mistreated by a narcissist, and I, like, trying to battle that in what I was going through, like, was just, he didn't know nothing, of course, because I don't, I ain't, I ain't telling nobody nothing, and so I'm battling this thing, and then one day I was in the bathroom and I'm looking at myself and I just started to cry, and in that moment I was like, dang, like, you hate yourself. And
And
I had to hurt
were
my
you punishing
feelings.
yourself in this relationship with this narcissist?
I wouldn't say I was punishing myself. I would say because of another, like, situation with relationships, I felt like I didn't have no family. I don't have no family out here in DC. He was my best friend, you know what I'm saying, from Detroit. And so I'm like, okay, you can come out here and just trying to, just to have, I was trying to fill a void. Right, out of a relationship that I, a situation, and that was the only reason why he was out here, because I didn't want to be out here by myself and trying to fill a void that could not be filled. You know what I mean? And that's how he ended up out here. You know what I'm saying? That was a whole situation. And so, yeah, I'm in the mirror and I'm just like, in that, like I told people, I had to hurt my own feelings. And a lot of people are not at places to hurt their own feelings to actually deal with their issues and heal. Stop blaming everybody. You got to get to a point where you can be truly honest and look in the mirror and be like, internal reflection. Right? Like, I, like, it's like, this is happening because of me. But I had to forgive myself for what I did to myself. God was like, you know what I'm saying? God was like, God was telling me all, the whole time, like, and let me know, like, just, whatever my spiritual journey was, just, you know what I'm saying? Like, hey, like, you get out that mental bondage. I
It's
already
kind of
set you free. It's tough. I'm 15,
exactly,
15 years. A strumming, like a
exactly.
stronghold, and I'm tugging. I'm like, I'm trying to pull, and I'm trying to, and it's like, oh no, you come back. Nope, no, come back here. Nope, you gotta. In 15 years, struggling. And when they talk about strongholds are real.
Oh,
Something can
yes.
have such a hold on you, and you in your heart, you so want to break free from it. But you, it's a tug and pull. And sometimes people never even get to the point of getting through that stronghold, right? And they be in that stronghold for their entire life. There's people out here that have strongholds on them their entire life until the day that they die.
I always say that I think that they should teach 12 steps in school. Folks have to get to the point where they're in addiction before they
Yeah.
get the 12-step program. But I think that they should teach 12 steps in school because all of those steps are steps that can be relevant to general life.
Yes.
The taking accountability for our own stuff.
Yes.
The learning to forgive ourselves, to know that God is forgiving us, and then to forgive the people around us for the parts that they play in it. All of those steps are so important in our evolution as self-empowered people.
Yes, most definitely. And I'm in the mirror and I'm like, I love myself. Tears in my eyes. I'm crying so hard because I didn't believe it in that moment. But the more I said it, the more I believed it. The more I said it, the more it became a part of who I was. The more I said it, the more confident I got. The more I said it, the more I got my power back. Right. And that right there was a life-changing experience for me because I got my confidence back and I started to redefine my identity.
Right.
Who are you? What do you like? Right. And I started to redefine who I was. You know, like you're not that person anymore, baby. That was you at 14. You 22, 23 right now. I
Yes.
had to redefine who I was. People like me, you so confident. You so I wasn't always like this, baby. It took work. And it's work that some people don't want to put in. Let's be real.
It's painful work.
It took work. It is. It took work. You know, and I started to gain that confidence. I was like, you know what? I'm about to go to the store and buy me some shorts. I'm gonna go ahead and just, the first time wearing shorts was like in 2014, probably. Out in public. So I had my first time of when I was actually showing my skin in public. And I'm in my 20s, you know, and I wore shorts for short shorts for the first time. I felt so uncomfortable. I was just like, I just felt like people were looking at me, but that's all in my head. And then mind you, I'm at the time I'm working with young people. I'm working with middle and high school students in DC, loving on me. Dang, what? Dang, looking at nothing. Like you in your head, girl. Like you ain't like that. All in my head. They didn't think nothing. They didn't even know. To this day, when I talk to them, they grown now. But not something like you was going through. I didn't never know. They didn't even know. But I was in my head. But that was my that that was me stepping out of my own self and say, you know, I'm about to step out here and try and I'm gonna step out here and put something. I'm gonna show my. I'm a. And I finally got the courage because, mind you, I'm. It took me 10 times to get out the house trying to switch my clothes. And okay, I'm put this on. Nope. I would have a coat on or one of those little half little jean jacket. Oh, that was my thing for the summer. Girl got shoes on because I ain't wearing no heels. I ain't wearing no sandals because you ain't seeing my feet. You know, so I was just like so in my head. And my liberation moment happened when I was 30. I told myself, I said, I'm about to be liberated from this. I'm about to be free. I made a conscious decision. This thing right here has no place in my life no more. It's over. So for my 30th, I was going to Cancun. Girl, I got in shape. I got in the gym, got my body right. Okay. Bought me some two pieces, bought me. I can show you the picture. I can see the picture. I'm on a beach. I'm on a beach with a bikini on. Two pieces. Like this.
Love
You know? And I felt so good. And I felt totally free.
Yes.
I felt so I just like I didn't care. I was on a beach. I don't care what looking at me. Like I felt so good. Like, you look good. You know what I'm saying? I felt so good. And that was my liberation moment. And so when I talk about unlocking your freedom,
Right.
unlocking your voice, unlocking bondage, unlocking whatever it is that is holding you back or stopping you from reaching your fullest potential, whether it's business or mental or whatever it may be, right? But that unlocking your freedom, like I had to unlock my own freedom, right? And again, it took work and it wasn't easy, but I felt my liberation moment. I told people my retreats like, you are on a road to liberation. I'm not saying it's gonna happen today, but baby, you gotta start somewhere, right? And sometimes people don't even have the time and space to reflect and really think about all the things that is impacting their own lives. Because I gotta take care of my kids, and I gotta do this, and I gotta go here, and I gotta do this, and I gotta da 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 da. That you don't even have a space to say, man, I need to deal with this here so that I can show up in a different way for myself. And that's going to overflow to everybody that's attached to me. Right? And so the retreat is really a space for people to self-reflect and dig deep. When I tell you, I asked a question about, we were talking about being molested. All females have been molested except one. And when I tell you so many girls just crying because they felt like somebody understood them and they wasn't alone, right? It was such a powerful moment. And we had a mirror activity. You had to literally talk to yourself in the mirror. And it would take girls 10 minutes to even say anything because they was like, you know what? I've never looked in the mirror at myself. And I've been there. I walked past that first time I looked in the mirror and I had to apologize. That was the first time I actually looked in the mirror after all those years that had happened to me. All those years. And you got to look in the mirror and you got to talk to yourself. Say whatever you want to yourself. Broke down crying. But that's that liberation. That's that shedding, right? Like, go ahead, get it out, get it out. And then we say, you know what? We're going to burn all of this. We do a bonfire session. We write everything down and we let that stuff burn. You know, and we celebrate as a union. That's like the last kind of thing that we do to really let those things burn. It's like, okay, now what are you going to embrace moving forward? Once you burn this, it no longer exists in your life. It's gone. Your past, you can't get back. It's gone. Heal from it. You're gonna have triggers, right? You're gonna have triggers. And I tell people all the time, people say, oh, like healing is a journey. Healing is not a stop. Okay, like you know, when you deal with something that causes you life, it's a lifelong trauma. It's a lifelong thing. That means it's going to always affect my life. But I have to understand how to maneuver through it and understand my triggers and when I'm feeling this is happening because of something that happened to me that I had no control over. It's a lifelong trauma that I'm going to always forever have in my life. Right, but it's like, how do I move through that? How do I operate in forgiveness? Right, forgiving people who are a part of that, so I can move forward with my life. And I tell people all the time, forgiveness is not for them, baby. It's for you. Forgiveness. And I had to get to that point, and I was crying. It was so hard, but I had to let it go. And I just felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulder when I was just forgave and from a place of, you know, just from a place of this is for me. And I'm not forgiving. I'm not saying I'm forgiving to say, oh, well, or like it no longer exists. No, it happened. Real. But me saying I forgive is for me to be able to move forward in my life, that this thing no longer has a hold on me, that I can move through life and become my best self.
And then you carried this message forward to the man that you eventually married.
Yes.
Tell us about that experience.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, so we were talking about his grandmother, well, his aunt. And one me and him, we connect on a spiritual level. You know, we were just friends and stuff like that, you know. And we had realized that like we were literally going through similar things around the same age at the same time, didn't even know each other. Right, you're like 2008. I'm like, wow, 2007, 2008. You know, so you know, was so you know, so God has a way of God has a way of connecting people. Just say that.
Absolutely.
Yes. But definitely, even when I got with him, that year was my liberation moment. Right, so here I am about to open up to a man. I'm just starting my liberation moment at the age of 30, and I have to be okay with going through this experience, you know. And I ended up telling him about it, and he was like, come here. And so I took my shirt off and stuff, and he just started kissing my spots. He was like, you beautiful, you beautiful, I love your skin, your skin is beautiful, you know. And I was just crying. You know what I'm saying? You know, but he was just so embracing, like, hey yo, like you beautiful. You know, I'm here with you. I'm here to take this journey with you as you continue to push past this thing, you know. So he was just very just loving and very patient, and very understanding, because that was my first time ever opening up to a man about that, right? Because that's dear to me. And then you have people who can use that against you and talk about you and oh da, 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 you know, and try to use it as a weapon, right? Right. And that didn't happen, you know. So he embraced me with so much love, you know, and I just appreciate that because I had not shared that with no man ever in my life.
And
You
he
know,
tells me that you embraced him in the same way and allowed for his tears to flow.
yes, Yeah, I feel like one, having a safe space with your partner is important. So that's something that me and him, even when we first talked, like, hey, look, like, these are my non-negotiables. I don't want nobody yelling at me. I don't think he's like, hey, look, me too. I'm with that, and so we established, just non-negotiables, number one. But also before that, we was friends for just a year. We was friends for a whole year before we even got together. And sometimes people miss that mark. They want to jump into something like ASAP. But no, take a year so you can be friends. So we built a friendship. We didn't do nothing at all. We was in separate states. God was like, girl, you fast. You gonna be in another state. You can't get to him. You oh, God is just so funny. But we was just friends. We was friends for a whole year, literally. Being able to learn each other, understand each other, and talk and build, and that's the foundation, right? I tell people all the time, if you take sex out the picture of your relationship, what are you standing on? What do you got? A lot of people, if you take materialistic stuff out the equation of your relationship, what do you have? You don't have nothing. You're not standing on nothing.
And we saw that a lot during COVID. You had all of these relationships that were
Oh
built on
my God.
nothing. And then when they were thrown together and had to actually relate, they realized they had nothing in common.
Nothing. Nothing at all. And so and even with me, with my husband now, I had to repray a prayer. I was praying for the wrong type of man. God was like, didn't you pray for that? Didn't you ask for that? You got it. Now you don't want it? Because you didn't pray what I need you to pray. So I had to repray my prayer. And even when we were just friends, God had already showed me he was my husband. He was like, don't mess that up. That's your husband. We're just friends. I didn't tell him that. But people don't realize when they praying for materialistic stuff, but you're not praying that he's a man of God. You're not praying that he's loving, he's affectionate, communicate. Like you miss all the qualities that actually matter in a relationship. So I had to literally repray my prayer, and a lot of times, like I said, people, look at all the extra stuff that don't even matter, it's been because I'm always like, even like life is like, you're going to go through some challenging moments, even with mental health. I mean, everybody's going to experience something at some point in life. Why? Because one, everybody got to die one day, right? Trials and tribulations are part of life all the time. Right? You gotta be able to have somebody that you can go through those things. Look, everything not gonna always be peaches and cream. It's not gonna always be great, pretty. Oh, Instagram pictures. No, we talking about real life, and you gotta find somebody who can do life with you, who can do real life with you. I don't want you to just do Instagram with
I mean, everybody can do
me.
Instagram. We can all live in the high times. It's those lows that kick our butt.
Yes, it's those lows. And even with, even when you are, in a relationship with people who have dealt with mental health challenges, it's a certain it's a certain type of way you have to communicate. It's just a certain, I feel it just it's different. I'm not saying like that, but it is like, certain things that you have been through that triggered them and stuff like that, and you come and be like you end up, adding to, and they done got through this whole thing, and now you kind of it's making them spiral back down to
So, I mean, kind of the point there is that you really have to be cognizant of who you are, what you're bringing, and how what you're bringing is affecting the other person. And you have to care enough about that other person to see their pain. And instead of sticking a thorn in the sore spot, be the one to pull that thorn out.
That's right.
All right. Well, if you had one message to give to our audience in terms of self-empowerment, what would that message be?
That's a great question. I would say accept yourself where you are. A lot of times people try to get to this place or try to be this and try to, it's just like you got to be able to accept yourself where you are and love on you in that moment. I will also say, Confidence is key. Confidence is key. And I'm not saying that you're not going to have moments where you don't feel confident, but you got to always be working on ways to continue to build your own confidence. So that way you don't feel like you need validation from men or from friends or from people or family who don't have your best interests at heart, and you're trying to ask them in for validation that they can't give you. Another thing is that there are going to be some people who never see your vision, and you need to be okay with that. You need to be okay with everybody will not see your vision. So if you have an idea about what you want to do and somebody don't see your vision, it ain't for them to see. As long as that vision came from God and God already confirmed that, he said, hey, green light, hey, baby, that's all that matters. Go forth and be great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it doesn't come from any higher authority than that. If God says you're okay, you're okay.
Yes. And also, it's okay to get therapy, baby. It's okay. There's a big stigma, within black families, and people want to call you crazy and this. No, baby. No, you're getting the help that you need. And the main people that we're talking to is the ones that need to be in therapy too.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So like it's
That is
okay.
true.
Yeah, like it's okay to get therapy. And one thing is like it may take you time to find the right person. It's a process. So don't just cut it off when you don't find the right therapist. I've experienced my first time. It wasn't a good experience. And now I gotta find somebody else. And I'm, just being open because that was my first time. And it stung. So I'm like, ah. And it was a black woman owned business. And it stung me. But I had to also understand that like it's a part of the process.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that people don't understand about therapy is they go to therapy for the wrong intent. They go to therapy for someone to agree with their point of view, and that is not the
Not
therapist's job, So when the therapist challenges them, and the therapist will challenge you to get you to think it through. And will not necessarily validate your position because your position may not be valid. But it's also not the therapist's job to tell you that's not valid. The therapist's job is to get you to self-reflect and see the error in your thinking.
Yes, that's a whole fact.
So if you're going to the therapist for them to agree with you that everybody else is screwed up, you're never
That's
going to find the right therapist because that's not what they're there for.
Exactly, for sure. And then just one more point. It's okay to do something different when you come from a family or just an environment where everybody doing the same thing over and over again. It's the same thing, and nobody is doing anything different. It's okay to be different. It's okay to step out there and do something that your family has not done. I'm an author, right? Although today my auntie was an author, I didn't know that. So I'm the second author in my family. Okay.
Bravo.
right. And then what's gonna say? I recently got into Howard University for my PhD program. I'm the first person
Bravo.
to just last month. Yep, I got my letter. And
Yay.
I'm the first one to pursue a PhD. People can say, oh, da, da, da. It's not what they think. Just because nobody in my family has done it, don't mean I can't do it. Who said that?
That's right. That's
Right?
absolutely right.
I'm on a commercial for Southern New Hampshire University. Who said I couldn't do that? Right? And so sometimes we don't see people that reflect what we want to do. We feel like we can't do it, or we feel like there's no way. It may look like it's no way, but you have to be able to surround yourself with people who want to do what you do, find you a mentor. You got to get into a different environment, because one thing I can say is that when I left my own hometown, DC allowed me to see something different at the age of 22 years old. If I had not left where I was from, I would not have seen anything different, and I probably would be a statistic.
Well, the thing is, like a snake, we have to shed our skin to grow. If we never shed that skin, there can't be any growth. So we have to shed that skin. We have to make the changes, and changes aren't always comfortable. You know,
Facts.
most of us are afraid of change, but we have to dig deep and find the courage to step outside of that comfort zone.
Yes, one thing that people always ask me about, they're like, oh my God, how did you leave? I get that question 1,000 times. You want to know how I left? One, I'm a risk taker, right? And it's like, what's the worst that can happen? You know, a lot of people are not risk takers. They need to be able to see the outcome before they go and jump in it. That's not me. If it's something positive, why not take a risk? If it's something positive, take the risk. Because that risk can change your life. When I tell you my biggest risk landed me my biggest blessing, my life would not be how it is now if I had not took the risk to go to another state and do something different. Not knowing the outcome. I mean, I was homeless. I had to navigate some things out here, but I didn't let that stop me because it's a part of the process. Now, those was only temporary moments to lead to a lifelong impact that I've had since I've been down here with young people. You know, so don't be afraid to take risk. It's uncomfortable, it's scary. But if you never do something different, you cannot get a different outcome. You're going to continue to go in circles and circles and circles and circles. I can't tell you, I go back on my block in the hood and everybody doing the same thing from like 30 years ago. No shade, but they doing the exact same thing. Like, I'm not missing anything. Like, people think they're going to miss out on something. I'm going to miss something. You're not going to miss nothing, baby. They're going to be doing the same thing when you get back.
And then I think that if you talk to anybody that has grown and moved forward and reached for higher goals, they will all say the same thing, that when they come back to where they started, everything is very much the same. And the only thing that really changed was them growing out of their skin.
Yes.
Great. So, Tanzania, if people want to get in touch with you, where can they reach you?
Yes. So they can reach me. I am on Facebook as Queen Tans. I am on Instagram as I am Queen Tans. And also I have a website, www.unlockingwithanyourfreedom.com.
Okay, perfect. And again, if you would like to see Tanzania speak, you know, she's given you her contact information. She is going to be at the Leadership Experience Tour in Troy, Michigan this Saturday, the 23rd. And you can see her speak there along with 45 other fabulous speakers. So, you know, definitely slide into her DM, slide into my DM, and we'll make sure that you get a ticket to come and just elevate and be enlightened. So,
Yes.
you know, definitely please come out and join us. And Tanzania, it has been a pleasure having you. And it was a pleasure having your husband and having him tell you what a great inspiration you were on him. And I can absolutely see why, and really, again, look forward to hearing your inspiring speech.
Thank you. Same here. It's on the
Thanks.
popping next week. We're going
That's
to
right. That's right. That's
have
right. We
a
are in it to win it.
Yes.
And, you know, this show is here for your enjoyment, your education, your information. So we were glad that you were able to join us and hear this inspirational message. And we thank you all, our audience, for the support. This show is for you. So if you've liked what you've seen, if you've heard something meaningful, please go to Tanzania's social media. Like, connect, follow her, and the same with us. Please like these shows, connect with us, subscribe to the stations, and by all means, please share. We're here with you every Monday and Wednesday evening. Chatters That Matter. Let's talk about it. I'm your show host, the celebrity doc, Cheryl Bryant Bruce, MD. Be sure that you come back and join us often. Health is wealth, and you are your greatest asset. Invest in yourself.